Are we going?
Into podcast.
Potter Who Cast.
But how's it called? Billis Manger at your service.
Don't forget me.
Don't you forget me.
Oh, let's go! That's class!
There is no such thing as...
A Friendly Mushroom Production. Doctor Who, Series 5, Episode 10, Vincent and the Doctor.
I just want to tell you before we start, these are my first episodes I'm watching with that Doctor Who 2005 to 2023 box set they came out with. Mm-hmm. These are the first ones I'm watching with that box set. And it's kind of I don't know what they did, but like all the ads are like old. The ads before the disc starts are old. So for this one, I got an ad for fucking... I got an ad for like Orphan Black Season 1. So I was like, wow. Wow, what a weird...
You step back in time. Yeah. Does that release to the thing that the PAL release does where like the menus are completely fucked?
Because like, I don't know.
The menus on my copy of the Blu-ray were like completely like I could barely get the episode started. I'm painting.
Yes.
I'm painting. Doctor Who Cast. Vincent and the Doctor. Broadcast on June 5th, 2010. What was top of the box office, do you think, on June 5th, 2010?
Is it still How to Train Your Dragon?
It is not. It's that's a callback to something from about 4 weeks ago that we just did. I'll give you a clue though. It's you're thinking similarly in terms of medium that they released that film.
Tangled.
No, but you're also thinking similarly in terms of genre of animated film. This is also a sequel. In fact, this was until. Potentially next year, this is the last entry in the series, although it has had two other entries since in like a kind of spin-off capacity, but like...
Ice Age?
No, but you're getting closer. This one came out 9 years after the first one came out, and it had three films before this that led to this film. That is the last entry in this animated series that is potentially coming back with a fifth entry quite soon.
Winnie the Pooh?
No. It's you might say this one makes some dreams work when you watch it.
Shrek and 4.
Shrek Forever After, yes, was number one at the box office. Do the roar. Do the roar.
I remember that movie.
That movie is, I think, people either overlook how metatextual it kind of is, or it isn't metatextual, but there's some bits in there that are very much about DreamWorks. Directed by Johnny Campbell, who did Vampire the Venice, so like it's all sorted. And written by Richard Curtis? I don't know who that is. Richard, do you know? Richard Curtis? He seems to be a new writer that has never really been around. What happened here is that...
I will say he's clearly never seen an episode of Doctor Who before.
What actually happened is that... what happened first is that Moffat... Because he's involved in comic relief, so he produced Curse of the Old Death. So Moffat was like, would you like to write, you know... Do you want to write this? And he's like, yeah, sure. What happened is... and this is from Wikipedia now. He handed in a draft and he was like, okay, look, you know what, guys, you can criticize it all you want. You know, I'm a big boy, you know, don't worry, just go all in if you have to. And like everyone who read it had like something to say, including Moffat, who was like, can you please watch an episode of the show? Because this isn't how the Doctor interacts with people. Can you please like just... Because he wrote way too much dialogue apparently for the Doctor to say, to the point where it was like, this isn't how the character would interact with anyone, even like in a different incarnation. Apparently it was his idea to do Van Gogh as well, apparently. But in a sentence, this is a very long sentence, this is like a run-on sentence, the Doctor and Amy visit Van Gogh when they see like a creature, one of his paintings, which turns out to be a lonely and lost bird-like creature that is also invisible, but Vincent can see it, and then he kills it, and they bring him to an exhibition of his work because Amy wants him to like essentially stop being depressed, and he's moved, but Amy's disappointed when she finds that he still killed himself. And we will talk about suicide, by the way.
Guys, content warning mentions of suicide. Depression, bipolar disorder, and so on.
Mm-hmm. This one has become like, well, I suppose on the ending of this one has become like this like whole thing of itself. In fact, I would say I would kind of hazard a thing of saying that like the ending has become the episode's overriding legacy, and also the episode's overriding quality marker for people.
Yes, which is weird because that scene where they go to the present and show him show Vincent Van Gogh the museum, it is from a different show. It does not feel like Doctor Who. Nothing about it feels like Doctor Who, be it the plot beats, because you feel like the first person to say do not do this would be the Doctor. Mm-hmm. Like, but also like the aesthetic beats, like fucking the music, and then the way it's shot, the way it's edited. It's like so much not like Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much more like a Richard Curtis thing. But I will say, but here's the thing I'll say. I accidentally watched this episode with a friend. A friend was over, we were working on something, and then I said, okay, I got to watch an episode of Doctor Who. I did not say it was for a podcast because I did not want to be pelted with tomatoes. And they were like, oh, she was like, oh, what episode? And I said, oh, Vincent of the Doctor. And she went, I love that episode. And then as we were watching it, I kind of like, because she knows Doctor Who and she's seen a lot of episodes, but through her reactions, I was watching and I was realizing, okay, I think I get like the appeal this episode has.
Mm-hmm.
It is the most un-Doctor Who like episode, which is probably why there has been like a people's opinion of it has changed, in our fandom at least. People's opinions of it has changed, where people are now like against it to a certain degree. But also like that's what makes it a very like accessible episode. And I think the wish fulfillment at the core of this is like who won, like on one level, wouldn't it be amazing to know that all your suffering is worth something? To have somebody be like, hey, all this pain you're going through right now, there are people who recognize you. And they see through what you're suffering and they say you're actually like doing something good with all this suffering right now. And then wouldn't you want to do that? And and everyone has at some point heard a story about like an artist or someone who's touched them and who like, you know, never like felt recognized or never like, or, you know, had to deal with situations like what Van Gogh had to deal with. And everyone has dreamt of like, I wish I could like go back in time and like say, actually, don't worry, like your work is recognized, you're like a hero to me, and your work meant so much to me. It's to this episode's credit that they don't like do the thing where they still go, hey, just because you gave Van Gogh like a good day doesn't negate what he went through, but it also doesn't mean that what you did was worthless.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, that wish fulfillment is so pure and so powerful. Like, I get why people are so obsessed with this episode and that scene. And even I felt a little bit emotional about that scene, you know, as someone who has struggled with, not on the same level as Vincent Van Gogh, but as someone who has struggled with, you know, self-doubt, imposter syndrome, depressive thoughts. If somebody came up to me, like, knocked on my door, opened my door and said, like, oh my God, you're that person who did this and that means so much to me, I would be, like, really touched. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's that kind of, like, naive but powerful, I would say childish, not derivatively, but, like, that kind of, like, idea that a child has, that, you know, like, it powers this episode, and it almost, it's like, it's the reason there's parts of it that don't work, but it's the reason why ultimately, like, almost fucking 20 years later, it's still, like, a wildly beloved episode.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my treatise on Visit of the Doctor.
I think, like, there's a version of this that is really kind of, like, well-natured, but really clumsy with, like, a lot of the stuff it does.
Yes.
I think the scene that really kind of, whenever I watch it, really kind of, you know, calms the kind of nerves I have, like, are they going to, like, you know, do something silly? And it's a scene I think that's really, really good to have in it, is the scene where he goes into, they say, like, Vincent, come on, let's get going. And Vincent's completely, like, you know, he's having, like, a really, really bad, he's in, like, an episode. He's, yeah, like, you know, he's really kind of really, really down in the dumps. And, like, the doctor tries to be like, you know, I'm going to fix this. I'll cheer you up. And that the episode has, like, the sense for, like, Vince to be like, can you please just, like, you're not helping. Can you please leave me alone? Can you please, like,
not, you got to go.
Yeah, you got to go. Like, you're not fixing. Like, I think, like, that scene is a really, it's a really good depth to have that scene in there, rather than to be like, you know, this guy can bound in, like, save everything. There's also a version of this where the monster is, like, the source of all his like,
yes,
problems. And I think the fact that they skirt both of those is good. I do think the fact that the ending is that he kills the monster is kind of bizarre in the term.
Yes.
Yeah, it just feels kind of out of nowhere. It's like the last, and it goes back to the whole gallery thing too. It feels out of step with, like, the stuff that's come before this, in a way that's kind of a bit clunky, a bit awkward. I don't know. It's I have a bit of an issue when shows like this, especially this show, when it tries to deal with, like, heavy topics, because it can kind of put its foot in its mouth.
Right. Right.
And like this kind of stuff is, like, similar to you were talking about your imposter syndrome and stuff. Like, you know, I struggle a lot with my depression. And when shows try and do this, it can feel very, like, you can sometimes tell if it's been written by someone who hasn't struggled, or it's, like, trying to, like, sanitize,
right,
what's going on. I think there's moments in this where it kind of feels like they're being like, whoa, 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 and, like, you know, pulling back from,
right,
really kind of delving into things. But, like, I think it's at the very least respectful of what was going on.
Come on. Come out. Come on. Let's go outside.
Out! Okay? Get out! What are you doing here? What are you doing here?
Very well. I'll leave. I'll leave you.
I think it's an episode that is written by someone who has their own idea, as you said before, has their own idea of, yeah, what the show is, and it really shows sometimes. So, like, this is us.
Really, really.
Yeah.
I think nobody is acting like themselves in this episode. Amy isn't acting like herself. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is maybe Matt Smith's most... I was watching him throughout the episode, because Tony Curran as Van Gogh is such a fantastic guest performance. Mm-hmm. Like, to the point that everyone else kind of takes a back seat. And I was watching Matt Smith a lot, and it really felt like he was coasting. Like, there were moments where, I mean, I don't want to, like, he probably wasn't. He's a hardworking actor. Sorry, Matt. Sorry to imply that you would ever coast. But it really did feel like there were moments where it's like, what show am I watching again? This is Doctor Who? Like, it feels so weird to see these scenes where the doctor's just sitting in the background and, like, talking to himself and doing almost nothing in the episode. To a certain degree, it is one of those episodes where the Doctor Who side of it is like so non-existent. And I also feel like this, objectively speaking, trying to be like, which you know is impossible, but trying to be objective, there's so many aspects of this episode that like really, I really noticed this time, like there's so much ADR. Do you notice how many times there's seen, like there's so many scenes where they're like, the character has a back to their to the camera and they're like adding some quick piece of information, like it's invisible or it's this or that. Yeah. So like, so, yeah, there's so much of that ADR.
There's one bit that I really love though, which is at the start where they're in the gallery and the most like theater kids of all time are like, it's the Doctor. The Doctor, that is to say, the Doctor who trained Van Gogh when he had madness. Yes. Like, that's so obviously like ADR.
way
late in the game.
So much ADR. And also I think for an episode, I feel like the idea to be like, this monster is invisible and only Van Gogh can see it. They don't never explain why, which I like. There's no like idea of like, oh, it's his mental illness allows him to see this, which I think would have just like, oh, that maybe like, that is like the worst possible thing they could have done. But the idea to have the creature be invisible is good. I don't think they commit to it because they show it, the CGI, so many times. Yeah. And also, it really feels like if they had committed to it in the sense of like, let's make a version of this where you don't see the creature. So let's put all that budget into making these invisible effects, right? As opposed to like, let's try to make these invisible effects and also show the creature, which I don't think it ends up doing either quite well. Like whenever the creature is invisible, the way they do it is, you know, they would just show you like a still shot and then something in the background tips over very slowly. Which is like, come on, guys. But then that's kind of like, the creature is not the point of the episode. The creature is so throwaway. The creature dies and there's like 20 minutes left. That doesn't matter. The creature is just there as an excuse for them to go see Van Gogh and to culminate towards that final scene of her bringing Van Gogh to the present.
And then we get public domain Coldplay.
Yes.
Like, take all your moments while you can, Van Gogh. Yeah. Don't worry about the future because we're here in the present. Yeah. And then Bill Nighy, who is, you know, obviously doing a favor for like a couple of, like maybe a day of filming, but like is still relatively solid.
I think a lot about, I think to me, my biggest problem with this episode is that it does the thing that a lot of people do where it's saying like he took his mental illness and he made art out of it. And that, you know, is good, which is like, I always feel like that tips over into a very dangerous territory where you're like, you're almost going, you know, it's okay that this person suffered so much because they managed to transform their suffering into like art, which we can consume and then appreciate, you know. What real life event recontextualized a lot of this episode for me? It was the death of Robin Williams, because there's so many people online who like to this day take any opportunity they can to be like, he was so tortured and he still entertained us.
Yeah.
Which is like transforming him into like, yeah, it's kind of flattening the human experience into like a transaction between how much mental illness can you exchange for art that you can then produce and be enjoyed by the masses, which to me is such a, it so dehumanizes the person that's suffering, you know? And it leads into that thing where people are like, where you can almost hear people going, it's okay to suffer a little bit if you can then turn your suffering into art, which is like, I would much rather have a healthy person who does not produce art than to willfully be like, this person needs to just endure their mental situation so that they can then produce something which I can then consume, which I don't think this episode is saying, partly because I don't think it's making that connection, but I think it is like that scene is kind of fodder for that kind of thinking.
It's like the commodification of like trauma into like, you know, it's like it's just something that kind of happens these days. I'm not a big fan of I think it's kind of just, I think the ending as well, where, you know, I think there's a weird like naivety to Amy in this one that just feels so strange. Especially her being like, you know, oh well, we fixed him. You know, obviously he won't have
killed,
you know,
himself.
Killed himself.
Yeah, because the thing she says is there's going to be more paintings. So his only, which again, it's not what the episode is saying. We need to make this very clear. Mm-hmm. The episode isn't saying that Amy only puts value on Van Gogh. The reason Amy cries because there aren't more paintings. No, the reason she cries because she thought she made an emotional connection to Van Gogh, and she thought that she made an effect, and then she goes and she thinks that actually she didn't because he still killed himself. And having more paintings is the easiest way to like portray that in a visual medium. She doesn't actually think his only value is to produce more paintings. But at the same time, that is kind of how that thought comes to metastasizes, you know, comes to be. You know, if you see Van Gogh as only his paintings as opposed to like a person, then anything you do to that person, the only result you can expect is to have more paintings. He becomes just like a machine to make paintings. Which is
I think they skirt a lot of stuff, but they come very close to not skirting a lot of stuff. And
there's
moments where they go,
try to see what I see.
We're so lucky we're still alive to see this beautiful world. Look at the sky. It's not dark and black and without character. The black is in fact deep blue. And over there, lighter blue. And blowing through the blueness and the blackness, the wind swirling through the air, and then shining, burning, bursting through the stars. Can you see how they roar their light? Everywhere we look, complex magic of nature blazes before our eyes.
I think going back a bit now to the idea of like an invisible monster, and you touched on that as well, it's not very compelling to like direct stuff where like you have to basically imply that there's nothing there while also completely like showing there's nothing there, because it just never comes out right. But I think other than like that, and I think the way they film the final bit as well, like where they're running around the museum, is kind of a bit, I think it's very well like put together, like visually. I think, you know, it's shot great. It looks beautiful. Like I think the composition and the just the editing, I think it looks great. But I do, as you were saying, like the whole metaphor of the monster being like, you know, something only Vincent can see, but it you know, it hurts everyone, but it, like only Vincent can feel it, and only Vincent can like, it feels a bit like, that's another thing where it's kind of skirting the commodification of like, you know, human suffering, because it's like, here's an embodiment of his whole like, you know, his whole mental anguish. It's a giant chicken bird that only he can see that's running around Holland, the Netherlands, rather. It's a bit like, I don't know. What I would like to see in the future, maybe give it a year, there should be an episode where the Doctor brings Alexei Germasov a year into the future so you can see the impact of Skibbley Toilet. Just imagine him walking into like an internet cafe, and then Doctor like going up to the guy and like, can you tell me what you think of Skibbley Toilet? And it's like, it's all about your, and the guy's like,
yeah,
the Skibbley, the camera heads, they're the greatest invention of human civilization. And then
right,
like crying,
right,
yeah, they should do
it's,
that
it's it's very telling that Bill Nye says, you know, he transformed his pain to see the exciting beauty of the world, which, you know, is one of those things where if you say it out loud, it sounds like a good thing. But the more you think about it, it's like,
maybe
it's kind of sussy. You're a sussy baka, Bill Nye. And by the way, he's not a future doctor. Shut the fuck up, everyone who said that. I hate that shit so much. That is the shit I hate.
Well, not even a future doctor. They get great use of William Hartnell.jpg at one point as well. That one JPEG that you find everywhere. It's using all the promo stuff for like the first Doctor stuff, of William Hartnell scowling at the camera from Toymaker. Right. They got great use of that. But like, there's
it would be really funny if they edited that scene where another thing that comes out is Joe Martin. Joe Martin. Like, that's the first image that comes out. I think, you know what? I think that would be a really good thing, and I support it. I wish they would do it. Mm-hmm. It would piss so many people off, but I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah.
I do think what we wanted to say? This is like the most solid and done and like perfected that the fairy tale vibe of Moffat's era is, because I think that also is why like we are so willing to give this episode the leeway, like the past, because it is very much like a children going like, what if you could go back in mid Van Gogh, and then you and look, the painting looks like his house, and this and the place looks like the painting, and that's so much fun, and you're like, yeah that's fun, and then it ends with like a nice message, and you're not that mad about it, because you know it's not like it's got that childish naivete about it. And I feel like the version of this without the childish naivete, and I made a positive comparison to the Chibnall. Well, not a positive comparison to the Chibnall era, but I feel like, oh yeah, I did in the Victory of the Daleks episode, another episode with V and D in the name as this one. I think the bad version of this is Duo Dati, when like a bunch of people die, but there isn't Lord Byron's in danger. It's like, no, Lord Byron's special. Like there's no one. The thing this episode does not do, which is to its credit and should be lauded, is that at no point do they go, Vincent Van Gogh is special. They imply towards that, you know? There's like the implication and hinting towards it, that great man theory, but they never actively engage in it, and that kind of gives it a pass.
I think like even looking at like other historicals before this, the closest you get is like, I guess, Unquiet Dead. In terms of how they present it, because like he's such an integral part of like the whole process that like there's no real time to do that kind of glorification stuff, because it's just like, you know, he's a character that they're working with, that like, you know, they're looking out for him, they're like he's helping out with stuff, whereas something like, you know, Shakespeare Code is so built off, you know.
Well, but even Shakespeare Code, but even Shakespeare Code, you know what? Yeah, it is like Shakespeare Code does do that. But I think Shakespeare Code, the thing that it doesn't do, is like the most egregious amount type of like great. Well, you know what? I take it back. Shakespeare Code does do that. I was trying to justify it, but you know what? You're right. Shakespeare Code does do it.
It's like every single historical before this, with maybe because I don't know if it, do you really count Tooth and Claw? Because Tooth and Claw is like,
no, I don't.
It's she's just kind of there, but like. Unquiet Dead, like the most you get is them being like, oh, I'm such a fan, Charles. Whereas, and then you get like the kind of cap at the end, but like that's not really a thing. Shakespeare Code and Unicorn and the Wasp are so built off, look at these great people in history, and look how much like their work is influential to like,
right,
know, so across the stars, you know, all these aliens are basing themselves up, and it's just, this is just, you know, this is more like, here's Vincent the Man, rather than here is Vincent, like the icon. But then that's like a blast like, style truck driven through at the end, where they're like, I think he was the finest painter who's ever lived, and there'll be no one ever like him again. And it's not so much shooting stuff in the foot, but like it kind of trips over itself at that point, to the point where like it just feels like they're building to something, and they're building this great kind of portrait of, you know, the man, not the iconography, and then it just falls down because they want to have this moment, and they have to like push it into the episode that doesn't really feel like it's a natural progression of where they're headed.
Yeah, it's not like the Shakespeare Code where that bit where he realizes that he's like, I know you're time travelers because I'm such a genius, and the thing doesn't, and the fucking and what's it called, the psychic paper doesn't work because he's too smart anyway. Yeah
it's good. There's a moment that I think is kind of maybe a bit kind of, you know, not so much like, you know, collar tugging or like, you know, a bit kind of guys don't know, but a bit kind of corny is when but I think it kind of works is when they're lying down at the end and like Vincent's like, look at the sky, the way it, like it, everything sweeps in and turns into like, you know, starry night. But that also feels so out of place in that whole like kind of sequence as well. That it's
yes, like, that scene very yeah. much. Yeah. It does feel like. It is very much out of place in my opinion,
mm-hmm.
personally.
Because there's nothing like it before or after either. Yeah. Like where it's like,
and
you know,
it's literally just the episode takes a pause to do that.
It's just like we need to get some kind of Van Gogh iconography in here. Like, why don't we just do this scene where he lies down, he sees. The starry night. I don't know. I don't know. It's just, it's good. I do think, I know you're saying that like Smith and Gillan kind of a bit thing. I do think their kind of comedic interplay does kind of work. Like when like it's like the mm-hmm. physical kind of stuff, I think it's really fun. But I do think like, I don't know. There's a vibe to this one that like, it's a good episode, but the vibe kind of feels, as we said, very off compared to like other kind of episodes. But I do think it's probably the best like historical one they've done so far. And there's maybe like one or two after this. I really love Tesla, which is kind of doing a similar thing to this, where like it's like not like being like, you know, here's this great guy, here's this great, although it is kind of, but it's not. It's being more like, you know, here's like the human kind of guy, here's like the Tesla, the man, rather than like here's like Tesla, like the giant of like, you know, history.
Yes, yeah.
But after this, like the historic, like there's not really a historical, but the historical slot next time is Captain Avery, and like that's not really like a that's more like a tooth and claw, where it's like, you know, he's just an accessory to this bigger story.
I mean, the next historical
Well, I suppose Nixon is kind of
no, but he's not. He's not. No.
That's a Churchill.
He's a like, secondary. Yeah, that's a,
yeah.
Well, I think Churchill matters more to his episode than Nixon does to his episode.
But Nixon
is kind of there as a joke. Nixon is more of a joke.
Avery's there in Black Spot as like the kind of, but, you know,
yeah,
the touching point. And it's what is like, there's what is there after that? There's is there really series 7 kind of goes more for like, you know, historical kind of setting rather than historical figure?
Yeah, the town called Mercy.
Mm-hmm. Series eight is more like here's Robin Hood than like here's, you know, any like historical kind of figure.
Right, you're right, because the historical, quote unquote, historical figures that Capaldi encounters are like, or what, like Robin Hood, Santa Claus, superhero. It's all these mythical figures that exist in relation to the Doctor.
I feel like
the first. I mean, I think that what we're looking for, is celebrity historical, where it's like here is a person. Everyone recognizes, played by a big actor. And then if that is the determination, if that is the line, then Witchfinders is the next one.
Rosa, yes.
Rosa,
and there's Witchfinders, and then there's Nikola Tesla.
Even though love the historicals.
The historicals kind of like...
I'll give him this. I like historicals because it gets kind of tiring seeing these characters run down a hall, like a hallway, a metal hallway, and they and fighting against a balakipakapakapoof or something. Like, it's fun to see them do a funny little thing.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just like, I think this one maybe puts like the, not so much puts the brakes, but like this one kind of becomes their last big, like, you know, here's the big legend that we're going to do like an episode two until, you know, years down the line.
I mean, we are getting a very important historical coming up, a historical that me and you predicted.
Mm-hmm.
We predicted, we said, when are they going to do it? And they're finally going to do it. We are getting the Beatles episode, which is like, it only took them, what, fucking 60 years to finally do the Beatles episode, which means what is the next Now that we predicted the Beatles episode, I think I know what is the next big historical figure they're going to do. Pop historical figure, Elton John.
I think they're going to do this. They're going to do something Bowie related at some point, because they're going to be like, you know.
Fuck, you're right. It's either going to be Bowie or Elton John.
If the allegations hadn't come out, and if everything hadn't come out, they would have done Michael Jackson, I think, at some point.
And they would not have done Michael Jackson.
They would have done.
I don't think they would have done. I mean, maybe, because I feel like, I feel like Doctor Who's relationship to American celebrities is very. I've ever seen.
They'll do. They'll do JFK at some point, and they'll be like, you know, they'll tie it into, you know, 63. The assassination.
Maybe I could see JFK, but the one American pop culture figure I think they would meet is like Elvis, and they're never going to do Elvis because although they did do a book where 13 meets Elvis, I think, and then like it's people like Elvis, Marilyn Monroe, you know, Al Capone, that kind of stuff. I feel like Doctor Who really has a weird relationship with American celebrities. It's telling that like the big ones are Nixon, Tesla, and who else?
Who else? There's Rosa Parks.
Those are the big three. It's Nixon, Tesla, and Rosa Parks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they haven't done Marilyn Monroe. You know who I think they will do before any American celebrity? I think they will do Ian Fleming before any American celebrity. Mm-hmm.
It'd be an alien spy or something that they have to like track down, and then he's like, you know, this gives me an idea, and they're like, yeah, that's cool, yeah, to write a really racist movie called Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, and they're like, oh my god, they've never done Roald Dahl. That's so in the
Roald Dahl. Roald Dahl. I know why they haven't done.
Yeah, because you have to go into like. So, like the amount of courage you have to deal.
They never done that. Peter Pan too.
They, you know what they should. Well, this is us being like they should do this. It's interesting. Like all their American celebrities are like pre 1970 as well. I suppose Nixon kind of bleeds into the 70s, but like it's kind of like there's a clear idea of like where they want to explore, and like we know that like the series one finale is going to be set in. We don't know for sure, but like it seems like it's going to take place around like Roswell at some point. So it's interesting, like all their pop culture stuff is like, you know, 60s Americana, like it's all 60s like focused.
Well, to remember, I mean, it feels like the Doctor Who in America became like a thing where it's like there's enough of we were talking about it recently because Disney Plus did something for Gallifrey 1 this year, and it really felt like so rare for the show to recognize America as like a vibrant, potent fan community, which feels like a very new thing. This push from America. I mean, remember when they shot at the Grand Canyon and like Hoover Dam for Series 6, and it was like a huge deal because like we're in America, you know? And then compare that to like when they shot Daleks in Manhattan, when no one went, nobody cared. Like, it was literally just, it might as well have been they were going to Disneyland, because that's how much attention they paid to it, as opposed to, like, Season 6, where I felt like there was a more of a concerned effort for them to be like, no, there are actually people watching us now. Mm-hmm. And even then, that was, like, so little compared to what might happen next, which I think is, you know, we are probably heading towards, like, them meeting some American celebrity. I would say it probably will not happen, but if it does, I will be very suspicious. Walt Disney feels like a possible celebrity for them to meet. Any of those early, like, because they met Bob Hope, right? Didn't the first Doctor meet Bob Hope or something?
Bing Crosby, young Bing
Crosby. Crosby, yeah. Charles Chaplin seems like something they're about.
They were going to 100% do like either Chaplin or Keaton, because like they have like they have that one. I know he's not American, but like they have that one thing in the Eccleston thing of Metropolis and Fritz Lang and stuff. So like it feels like they would delve.
But also the thing is, America is a very like that's the thing. America compared to England is such a new country. England has this like extensive thousands of years of like legend and myths to draw from. They can do a Robin Hood. They can do a pirate captain. If you're going to look at American historical celebrities, you know, like the oldest one is like George Washington. You're not going to have George Washington show up because that's weird. That's a little bit weird, you know? And then you keep looking for these celebrities. Like I think the closest we could get to a Shakespeare code is like Mark Twain. And even then, I don't think they would do it because I don't think anyone in the original audience, like if we forget, Doctor Who is a British show. That's who their main audience is. I don't think any of them would be going like, ah, Mark Twain, the way they would go, ah, Charles Dickens, or ah, Shakespeare.
I think they do Poe. I think they would probably try and do Poe because they have
Poe, you know. Feels doable. Poe feels doable. Do we want to put in a, because we predicted the Beatles one so well, do we want to put in a bet? I think Bowie is next.
I think Bowie is next. I'll give you a list of people I think they're going to do at some point.
Go on.
Abe Lincoln.
Okay, I think Abe Lincoln they're going to do.
It'll be some weird like casting like John Hawkes who was up as like Abe Lincoln or something, which would be, right. Which would be fun.
It would be Daniel Day-Lewis. He's back. Remember when
he's back. And it's just for he's like, I really love, you know, Journey to the Center of the TARDIS. I'd really love to do an episode where I think there's a chance Jesse James will show up at some point.
Definitely. Somebody from the Old West.
Mm-hmm.
Billy the Kid.
Mm-hmm. This is very cursed. This is very cursed energy because this is a British show, but I think some like Sacagawea or Pocahontas, they might.
Yes, you know, I can see that. And fucking what's the name of the two guys that were with her? Lewis and Clark.
Mm-hmm.
Lewis and Clark feels doable.
There's a chance they do a very like, you know, I think it's a chance to do a very kind of you know, Christopher Columbus, but he's the bad guy of the episode kind of story, or he's like, you know, right. He's like one of the antagonists. I think they might do something with like, I don't know.
I think I got someone. Mm-hmm. I got someone I am willing to bet they do an episode on in the next 10 years. If not an episode, then a big deal, big finished story like Fritz Lang in Metropolis. And that person is Steve Jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Steve Jobs is definitely showing up. Well, and then I'll just put it here because my pitch for the Cyberman story I would always love to write is basically, because the thing I always like about the Cyberman is the idea that they keep coming, humanity keeps marching towards Cyberman, and that's why I really like that that audio with Metropolis and the Cyberman. My idea is, you know, some guy in the 60s or 70s in Silicon Valley like finds a piece of a Cyberman and like starts building a Cyberman off that and like falls in love with the Cyberman or woman or whatever, and the doctor is like, oh, I gotta stop it before it turns into a real Cyberman. But it's like, is this a different one? What is this? Like, kind of talking about like how that generation fucked up the entire world with their technology. But I feel like if whatever they do, it doesn't really matter. But I think Steve Jobs is a ticking time clock, much like how there was a ticking time clock for the Beatles.
I think as well. They might one day try and do something like, you know, Muhammad Ali or like...
yes, that's a doable one. That's a very doable one.
But yeah, you know what? That's show business.
Show business, kid. I hope that we're proven wrong. You never know. Maybe maybe in a couple of months, RTD is like, Shutigawa is going to meet Little Michael Jackson.
Shutigawa is going to meet Bill Clinton. It's going to be Clive Owen reprising his role as Bill Clinton from...
oh my God. I thought you were going to say Oppenheimer. Shutigawa in the background of Oppenheimer.
I genuinely think if Christopher Nolan hadn't made Oppenheimer, they would have done an episode about Oppenheimer. And there would have been like Oppenheimer versus aliens. Albert Einstein, the only time Einstein's showing up is in Time in the Rani, where he's kidnapped by the Rani. Maybe the Rani's going to show back up. Maybe Mrs. Flood is the Rani, and she's like, I've got Einstein here with me. And he's like, not again. And then it's the Rani's big return.
It really feels like they crossed, not like crossed the line, but like established a we're not going to do that anymore. When they did Let's Kill Hitler, and Hitler is immediately put in a cupboard, and they don't talk about him. It kind of felt like Moffat going, and I'm done. Like, there's no more of this. We're not going to do this anymore.
I want to issue a correction. Albert Einstein is also in the minisode Death is the Only Answer, which is written by school children, where he turns into an evil Ood.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah. And that's actually coming up. That hasn't happened yet in our timeline, but in this timeline has. But yeah. It's all about you. Talking points. I think it's an episode that like has its merits. I think the ending, the ending has kind of been deposed by it's been dethroned by the Zygon speech as like the kind of embarrassing clip, the clip Doctor Who fans overuse to show
to prove the show is cool.
Yeah, how capital I important things can get, but thankfully for the ending to this one, it doesn't get trotted out whenever a genocide occurs or anything, which I had the displeasure of seeing people reposting. Whenever any major conflict happens in the world, I see people reposting the Zygon speech, and I'm like, do you not kind of see how kind of embarrassing it is for you to be like, you know, people of the world should watch the speech and stop wars and stop fighting?
Yeah.
And it's like, guys, come on. But yeah,
Peter Capaldi would shoot you in the face.
We'd be like, can you please shut the fuck up and leave me alone? And then he'd be like, just stop it back out.
Stop it. Bang, bang.
Peter Capaldi voice, Skibbly Toilet, and he'd run off. Like, Skibbly Toilet, Clara. But yeah, I don't know.
Did we really just talk about Vincent and Doctor for 45 minutes?
We did. We're back. Vincent it up.
It's too bad there was no epic rap battle from Vincent Van Gogh for me to rattle off. you didn't record it, so.
Mm-hmm. You did, but there isn't that. What there is there's a whole Next Time trailer full of one James Corden.
Oh my god, that was such a scare. That was such a... I got like...
I will say, precipitating this by quite a bit, he's not really good, but he's good in that episode. And it's a very much a, you know, my theory is still that America broke him completely and he's never going to recover. And he's trying because we'll talk about it next time, but like, he's gone back to acting, and it feels like he's trying to regain, you know, a place where he was before. I don't know what's going to work out for him, but that's not right now. That's next time. So yeah, I think that's about it.
Bye. Vincent Van Gogh, fuck yourself.
I'm tempted to play the Public Domain Coldplay song, but I'm not going to. Because it's not all about your. Can I just actually say before we do anything else? The fact that that's introduced by two guys walking past with like a radio feels really, really like out of time as well. Like they're like, who's walking around
again?
With a radio?
Again, this entire series feels like the glass gasp of a culture like about to change in ways that we are still just beginning to come into grips with. It really does feel like this is the last one. This is it. And I feel like we're going to talk about this more throughout the season, or we have talked more about this throughout the season, because we recorded these out of order. But it really does. This entire season has that, like, I wouldn't say, I use the word stink, but it's not like a negative stink. It has that feeling of like, it just feels like, oh, this is the last hurrah, right? Like, this is it. This is the last time we're ever going to be able to do it like this way. And after this, it's fucking over, guys.
Mm-hmm. I think a part of that is because they shot most of the season in like 2009 as well. So like there's still this lingering element of the, like the 2000s. Whereas going forward, then you get like that real kind of crunchy early 2010s feel that like is, if you didn't live through it, it's really hard to describe how strange the early 2010s feel looking back.
Yes.
It's just a very strange time. But yeah,
that's why I'm so excited to, I mean,
yeah,
you should put this in the trailer, but that's why I'm so excited to revisit this season. Because it really feels like people are saying that they're like, okay, the Disney season is the start of a new era for Doctor Who. This feels like the end of Doctor Who and the beginning of Doctor Who. So it really, this season is like the transition period, and that's why it's so fascinating about it for me.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I was going to say the celebrities feel very early 2010s, but they actually feel very recent as well. Anyway, that's about it. Yeah, as you said, Van Gogh to the polls, and Pokemon.
Vincent Van Gogh to the polls.
Pokemon, Pikachu, I choose you.
Next time on Pod Tour, Who Cast?
Hello, I need your help. There's been an accident.
What is he doing up there? You put the advert up yet?
Yeah, did it today. Paper shop window.
Find me a man.
Yeah, otherwise you'll have to settle for me.
You have to settle for me first.
Oh, I love you. I love you. I love you. I love you. I love you.
Well, that's good, because I'm your new lodger.